This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, we continue our discussion about Martin Luther King Day and will the increased minimum wage really help the working poor? Joining me today is Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at NYU, also Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston, and finally Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post. Thanks for being with us, and let us go straight ahead to MLK Day. It carries different meanings for different people. Some people feel at this point it is a much-needed but antiquated holiday in the sense that people don't update it for the civil rights realities of today. Callie, do you think that King's legacy is being carried forward in a way that contemporary young folks can connect to?
I do think that it's being carried forward in that way, but what I think is that there are not enough of us continuing to carry it forward. It takes many voices and a constant vigilance around telling the story. And I think that what happens is those of us who understand what that revolution meant when he was at the forefront of the single greatest social justice movement in this country, forget to transfer that intensity to the folks that have come behind. And I think that it's incumbent upon us to tell the story, to tell the story, to tell the story. I am happy that PBS is re-airing the first hour of Eyes on the Prize. It's a project I had something to do with, as you know.
Absolutely.
But there are other efforts out here, and where there are continuing citywide efforts or even community efforts, I think we individuals need to sit down, as the composer just said, with our own families and make it significant to them. As I was listening to the first part of this show, I am reminded that on the night that Martin Luther King made the I've Been to the Mountaintop speech, I was a kid, stretched out across the bed with my parents, listening to it on a very scratchy radio, because it was not just rainy, it was stormy. And everybody had been warned not to go out. So for him to go out to make the speech was incredible. For us to be able to hear it was something. And I still remember that. And I was thinking to myself as I heard Andy Leung talk about that, I have to transfer that intensity, that what that meant and what who he meant, on to my niece and nephew so that they can carry it forward as well. So it's incumbent upon each of us.
Marcelo, you heard this statement that on the one hand, he meant a lot to African Americans, but he also meant to everyone something, a symbol of humanity, the transcendence of anger, nonviolence. Is that something that people are passionate about today? There is there's not very much nonviolence in the world right now.
On the other hand, because of that, there is also hunger, a hunger for the vision that the Reverend King embodied, a hunger for social justice, for civil rights, and really for the need to be constantly vigilant, as Callie said, about the struggles for equality, for human dignity. And today they may take a specific form, but the general structure of the vision remains the same, remains with us. And it is really a global vision of human justice, of civil rights, that the Reverend embodied, along with the great leaders in, we think of Gandhi, we think of Nelson Mandela. We really think of a global struggle for human dignity, for civil rights, for justice. And the Reverend showed us the way. He showed us the passion. He gave us the grammar. He gave us the words, where we can weave our dream.
Robert, I'm going to take this in a different direction. I think that you and I are roughly of the same age and certainly within the same generation. And by the time we really reached into our tweens, as they call them now, or our teens, you had MLK boulevards all over the country, and usually they were in some of the most jacked up neighborhoods that you will ever find. And so there was this complexity that I certainly know I had.
Chris Rock talked about in a famous routine.
Yeah, that I had in my mind. Well, why are they going to honor this man by naming the dingiest dead-end street after him? There was something that happened between the civil rights movement and today that I don't think went exactly the way people intended it to. It doesn't seem to me just the words, the hearing the words Martin Luther King, Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., don't necessarily bring hope to younger generations in the way that they did to previous generations. Do you agree with that?
I think to a certain extent that's true, because what happened is you had in the mid 70s and the early 80s, you know, Martin Luther King you know became this little shorthand for we need to honor something black in this city, so we'll name the boulevard after Martin Luther King, and the fact is, and Martin Luther King Jr. of course is as one of the people said in the earlier piece, you know, he certainly belongs to the African American community, but in a broader situation, he belongs to humanity. So to make this kind of a shorthand about you know, pleasing black folks in a nice honorific without thinking about the depth of the man completely and totally misses the point. My sense is, and our colleagues here, you know, could tell if they think this is true. My sense is that we've moved a little bit further along from that period in the 70s and in the 80s, where it was this kind of a shorthand thing, and there's now a greater reassessment and looking at King in his depth. And my sense is, my hope is that that's starting to filter down to the younger generation. But you know, that's something that we have to do. What is the most interesting thing is how King's message, though it's interpreted in different ways, King's message, there's an incredible consensus, politically speaking, from the left to the right, the idea of judging people by the content of their character as opposed to the color of their skin. Obviously, the different sides will emphasize different aspects of it, but it's definitely there, and I think that's permeated down to the younger people.
Kelly, I just want to get back to you on this level. We've heard Robert just talking about how left and right can embrace Dr. King's words, but in some cases, people who were in the civil rights movement say, well, you're misusing the words. If you say that Dr. King's speech meant ending affirmative action, you're misusing his words. How does that show what has happened to the legacy of this man?
Well, I think from the beginning, almost, particularly after the holiday was named, that what we have with a lot of people trying to remember the front part of King, if you will, and his involvement in the movement, but not what happened in the latter part of his life, and also actually what he was saying throughout his life, it just didn't get as much attention. But when he turned and spoke very eloquently against the war and against the Vietnam War and said why, that's what Ossie Davis was referring to. Lots of folks don't want to remember those words. They are very, very on point. And one of the things that I would highlight, not specifically about the war, but in general about where his head was at, he stood up and said, I'm going to say some things that it might make, I can't say it as eloquently as he did, other ministers disavow me. Other folks say I'm on the wrong path. But I have to stand up for the convictions that I have, and I don't see a lot of people doing that. In the face of being unpopular, I will stand and say what I believe is morally right. And so I think that's the King that is often not cited when we talk about Martin Luther King's birthday and legacy. And we have to remember the whole legacy. That's what I would like to see happen.
And actually,
I think that this is where the issue of education and the issue really of understanding the work of history in all its complexity is really the greatest tribute we could pay to the Reverend King. The idea that he was a whole man. He was a whole man who spoke to the whole world in great depth and in great complexity. Unfortunately, in these celebrations, we tend to reduce the complexity of the message to a few slogans.
And I will, even though I don't necessarily agree with him politically, I'll give John Edwards, former Senator John Edwards, credit. Sunday here in New York, he spoke at Riverside Church, where Reverend King denounced the Vietnam War, and Edwards used that spot to talk about, you his own vote for the Iraq War and how he feels that's a mistake. Now, the cynics will say this. This partly to distance himself from Hillary Clinton and so forth. But putting that aside, he was there talking both about King in the context of war and issues of war, but also the questions of poverty too. And that was the other part on the last few years of King's of King's time on Earth, focusing on poverty issues, economic issues, and so forth. And this was an interesting way to pay respect to the broader history, the complete history of the man, while also getting in some politics as well.
Well, you'll have to stay tuned for the rest of the show, because at the end of the show we have some lost tapes from the Reverend King that were found recently at a synagogue in Hollywood. But if you're joining us, we are NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. You were just hearing from Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post. We've also got Callie Crossley of the show Beat the Press in Boston, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor at New York University. Let's move along to the minimum wage. Congress recently voted to raise the federal minimum wage from $5.15 an hour to $7.25 an hour by 2009. That's a big hike for what has been a very small wage. It's the first minimum wage hike in a decade. And one New Jersey congressman estimates the increase would mean an additional $4,400 a year for a family of three. Now, Robert, you tend to be on the conservative side, conservative libertarian. I don't want to put you in a box, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of describing me. You actually want to know what I'm thinking
yes,
on this issue?
Yes.
Of course. I think it is it is the case that it is plain economic common sense that if you artificially, and it is an artificial situation, if you raise the minimum wage, it does put pressures, particularly on small businesses, in terms of their bottom line. If that were not the case, then why wouldn't people just raise it to $10 or $15 an hour? There is a recognition that there are economic costs when you raise the minimum wage, because you are in a sense stepping out of the pure free market aspects. Whether $2 is going to be dangerous in terms of impacting employment, it'll be hard to assess over a brief amount of time. But I mean, I don't think it's a good idea, particularly at the federal level. I mean, at the state, the further you get to local and state and local communities, it's easier to try to make these judgments. But by making a federal increase, I think is a bad idea.
All right, Callie.
Well, it's more complicated than I would have thought initially some years ago. And I think that some part of what Robert has to say has some truth to it. But I would say this, as the pressure is brought to bear on other parts of our society, we got to make some hard and fast decisions. And what we haven't been doing, because we've been scapegoating essentially those low wage workers, is making decisions around health care. That's a big money. We're not making decisions really about the war and how that spending goes. I mean, we got to make some decisions about limited resources, and that's the economic lesson. And so, but do we make the people who are at the bottom pay for it? And I think what this Congress is saying is enough of that. We got to figure out some other things. I also want to point out, and I don't know what the impact is because I'm not an economist, but I would say that immigrants who have come into the country who are working off the books have also placed the low-wage worker in a hard situation heretofore. And that is because as those employers who don't even want to pay what the minimum wage was, let alone what it's about to be, they've just, gone to pay people 40 cents an hour. It's sort of like, sweatshops here in the United States. So there we have to address also that as an issue, because that is being brought to bear on this economic situation. So while I am understanding clearly that inflation has eaten up a lot of really what this new raise is going to be about, something had to be done. There are states that had already moved to that, and in Massachusetts, it's one of the states where I live, we'd already moved to increase the minimum wage. I think the low-wage worker has been squeezed
too long, and we have to pay attention to it. And if this is the way that we put pressure on the other sectors, well, I guess this is we're coming in for a hard time, but we had to deal with it.
Marcelo, Callie raises the question of undocumented immigrants. There can be a lot of scapegoating around the issue of who does what work, but there is a, at least according to academic studies, a depressing effect on wages. Is there a way to try to deal with the impact of issues like the minimum wage, which primarily affect citizens and people with documentation, and then the fact that both undocumented immigrants and also some Americans just work off the books for whatever they can get?
Indeed, this is a very, very complex issue, but we need to place it in the context of the general momentum, the general fact that over the last generation, the average working American family has been losing ground in the context of just the immense, huge, unimaginable profits of corporations. So, in a way, the issue of a minimum wage, the issue of a living wage, needs to be placed in the context of a general pattern of increased inequality that has all kinds of consequences for average working families in our country. In the, you know, final analysis, what we really need is a major agenda to upgrade the skills of our average working working families. This needs to be in the context of a major education initiative, healthcare initiative, and that's the conversation we're not having. As Robert said, you will pay a price, if we can use that metaphor, by raising the minimum wage. On the other hand, it is in the context of an economy that continues to thrive in certain sectors. In regards to the illegal or undocumented immigration issue, there is a lot of evidence that suggests that our most vulnerable workers, especially African-American and working white poor families without a high school education, have over the last generation paid a general penalty for having to compete in the labor market, especially with off-the-books undocumented immigrants.
So unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. I know there's a much bigger conversation there, and we will continue it. But that's Marcelo Suarez-Orozco, professor of globalization and education at NYU from WLIU in Southampton. Callie Crossley from Beat the Press in Boston. She came to us from WBUR. And Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post. Thank you, everybody, and happy King Day.
Happy King Day.
Happy Martin Luther King's birthday.